In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we hear the second part of the interview with Carissa Conti, author of the book Chasing Phantoms, Personal Experiences, Observations, and Theories into the Abduction Mind Control Phenomenon. And Carissa runs the site intoworlds.net. And as listeners know, Chasing Phantoms, the book, was partially compiled from years of journal entries and various perspectives describing personal experiences with psychic warfare, dreamtime programming, military abductions, and harassment techniques. We focus in this interview on the concept of backdrop people and the nature of reality, an area written about in one of Carissa's articles titled When Everybody's on a Different Page. In this article, Carissa describes in detail the behavior and cultural variables that make up a backdrop person and backfield reality, and why there would be such a thing. This is a conceptual discussion based on theories from various writers and films that reference the backdrop reality or matrix program, complete with background characters. However, is this something that's real and can be tested for authenticity? Or is it merely our powerful minds projecting its psychological structures subjectively into the environment? Well, we delve into this topic with returning guest Carissa Conti. This is the second part of the interview.
I just have some instances where I should have died and glitches happened with reality, so I'm still here, basically. In my free ebook, which you can get on my website, Miscellaneous Stories of the Weird and Unusual, I get into it as well. One of them that I mentioned in my glitches write-up, I was in a car. It was being driven by my brother. So this was early 2000. We were heading on the 5 freeway south. We were coming back from L.A. to Orange County, and we hit the interchange of the 91 freeway, which at that time was experiencing construction. So there was the off-ramp for, like, the exit to get on the 91 was on the left side of the freeway, which is unusual. But there's a concrete divider, like forms a point, you know, dividing the exit from the rest of the 5 freeway. Mm-hmm. And my brother, he's cruising along at 70 miles an hour. And the freeway, you know, all of a sudden had this exit and he wasn't paying attention. And so I'm staring out the front of the car. And I see this concrete barrier point right in front of the hood of the car. I didn't even have time to emotionally react, to be full of panic or anything. It happened so fast. And all of a sudden the car just moved over to the side, which is physically impossible. You're going 70 miles an hour. If you were to turn the wheel, you would lose control of your car. I mean, to jerk it that quickly, because it was right in front. There was no time, really. The car just moved over. And then we were just where we were supposed to be, back on the 5 freeway, instead of going right into the pointy barrier. And then it started to hit me like, oh my God. And I looked at my brother and he was looking at me just bug-eyed. And we didn't say a word for the rest of the trip home. We just didn't talk about it at all. And I finally broached it with him like months later. He just didn't even want to talk about it. Because something seriously really weird happened. Even he knew it. He just didn't want to talk about it. And this was a kid who wasn't afraid of anything and would talk about anything. But for some reason, that kind of freaked him out. And that was one example. And I had another one that happened. I mentioned this in my writings. It was in Charlottesville, Virginia. And this was back in 2006. And I was on what's called the 250. It's one of the major routes there that goes through Charlottesville, Virginia. And I was approaching, you know, going down the 250 from Pantops, approaching Peter Jefferson Parkway. It was a green light and there's like 3 lanes of traffic. We're all cruising at about 50. This cop car suddenly pulls out into the intersection doing a right on red. So he's now in front of me. But I didn't have time to slow down because we're going about 50. And I literally watched as reality all around all of us, like a bubble was put down and things were slowed down, and I actually saw that. And giving this guy enough time to pull out and be on up the road, and then this time warp, I guess you can call it, kind of lifted, and then we're all back to normal, like the way that we, you know, 50 miles an hour. So this major accident didn't happen, and I actually saw that. So I guess that would constitute a glitch, where you're seeing reality do things it's not supposed to be doing, and it kind of gives you proof that there are these other forces at work above us, whatever they are. Some people say it's God, you know, angels, aliens. I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm. You often hear stories from people in car accidents or similar types of accidents, but the time slowing down was something that was mentioned in a past show that I did with the guest, Gary Bobroff, who writes about crop circles and a Jungian analysis. He had done a series of webinars, and one of his guests, a physicist named Jaz Razul, who talked about how there is a time warp around the making of crop circles, in that they're made so quickly through our perception, something that was done overnight, you know, that has maybe 400 or 500 large circles perfectly geometrically spaced out, just impossible to do, even with a team that was organized, impossible to do in one night, especially if it was raining all night and there's no tracking of mud, there's no sign of anything. So the idea was that there is a time warp occurring during the making of a crop circle. So it made me think about that aspect also occurring when a potential disaster could happen in a car accident where it's not your time.
Right. But yeah, it's actually while you were talking, I was thinking of a book I have on my shelf. It's called Visitors from Time by Mark Davenport. And he talks about this time warp, almost like a field or a bubble of something around UFOs, for instance, where time is distorted. So it's a different rate of time inside the field versus outside the field, which relates to what you just said about the crop circles being laid down and what almost seems instantaneous to us, but which maybe in that bubble of like a time field would be a week, you know, but it looks like a couple hours to us. So yeah, I was just thinking of that as you were talking.
Our guest is Carissa Conti. We're talking about the concept of backdrop people and the nature of reality. And this is an area Carissa has written about in her articles, and one specifically titled When Everybody's on a Different Page. And Carissa has described in generous detail the behavior and cultural variables that make up a backdrop person and why our reality would have such a thing. Now, Carissa, to continue on with some of your anecdotes, you have some really interesting ones that relate to gatekeepers. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I mentioned that in the article. I had an instance. This took place, you know, where I used to live in Charlottesville, Virginia, and it was back in April of 2007. It was right after the Virginia Tech shooting. Basically, we were at work. We're having like a free pizza luncheon one day, and because we're in Charlottesville, this is a, you know, the Virginia Tech shooting was regional news. It came up during our luncheon when all the employees were just kind of hanging out, eating our pizza, and chatting, and just the idea of what had happened in that instance. You know, people were talking about it because they either knew people who went to Virginia Tech, or you know, they had sons or daughters who went there. But one of the guys at the table kind of started to broach the subject of how things weren't lining up, like the official story of what we were being told. It just didn't make sense. And especially the 2-hour delay between when the shooter first opened fire to when he made it all the way across campus and killed 32 people and then himself before, you know, the police finally got things locked down. So he started to broach that subject. How it doesn't make sense. That doesn't add up. Something weird is going on there. And I just kind of like picked that ball up and ran with it because I was glad to see somebody who's aware and questioning things. So I was starting to, you know, and pick that up and let's talk about that, contribute. And people around us seemed interested. They were like perking up. They found this to be interesting, except for one person at that table named David. And normally his personality was just stunningly bland. Just this guy has no personality and just talks in a monotone voice and just has no personality. And all of a sudden he just came to life the second that topic came up. And his eyes had like passion in them that he doesn't ever normally have. And he just became angry and incensed. And he leaned forward at the table and he kind of laid his hand down at the table, pointing towards me across the table, and just started angrily defending the mainstream story, almost like he was like a personal spokesperson for Virginia Tech. And he just, you know, just basically trying to shut the conversation down. Like, no, what they said is how it is. There's nothing funny going on here. You know, don't even question it. Don't go there. And just was very angry and very bossy and demanding. And everybody at the table just got really uncomfortable. And, you know, we're all kind of like, and just looking down and oh my God. And normally I might like kind of challenge somebody who's acting like that, but I could see everybody was getting really uncomfortable and I didn't want to spoil our free luncheon. So I just let him, fine, you win. But he managed to just shut that conversation down. And when I decided to drop it and the other guy dropped it and everything was returning to normal, it's like he you know, pulled his hand back and his shoulders loosened up and he went back to just being the way he normally is, like happy, like, you know, the status quo was maintained and everything's back to normal. Nobody's questioning anything, you know. So to me, that's like almost an example of what I call like the empty pawn on call. You know, they're ready to bark when needed to kind of maintain the status quo so people aren't questioning things, you know, nobody's stepping out of line, the sheep staying in the herd, you know, nobody's straying. And that was just a minor like microcosm example of that, but I think we see definitely larger macrocosm examples all around us in reality, especially like in the media. You know, you have all these people placed before us to make sure we accept their version of reality and we don't question things, stay within the herd, you know. And so to me, they're like gatekeeper pawns, just kind of placed all around reality. I mean, I don't know if this guy's a background person or what, and possibly, and maybe something kind of jumped into him at that moment and took over and directed the way the conversation was going.
Mm-hmm. You worked with him?
Yeah. He's one of the, just the people that worked at this company.
And
I was a receptionist, so he was just somebody who worked there.
I think you went into some detail in describing him. Can you give us some of those details?
Yeah, well, normally he was just had no personality, just very, very bland. And he spoke kind of in this monotone, robotic way, almost kind of effeminate robotic. It was just weird, just no personality ever. And that was the only time I ever saw him display personality, was when he all of a sudden just became this pawn on call, ready to bark and just shut down the whole conversation and dictated how it was going to go and told us what we were and weren't allowed to discuss. He pointed his finger at me, like he was leaning towards me on the table with his pointer finger, kind of like his hand resting on the table, the finger pointed at me, just pointing at me, you know, just, which it's bad manners, I guess. But, you know, just to, you know, to show how annoyed and angry he was, like, no, you will stop talking about this and just shut it down. So I think we see a lot of these kind of people. I mean, they may be slightly different from how he reacted, but I think we see a lot of this in reality, of people who want to dictate what we can and can't think about, what we can and can't talk about. And we see it on a microcosm level, maybe at work with people around us or family members, friends, neighbors. But we also see it the larger way in our society, like especially with the media, like I was saying, where it's like they want to just kind of try to control as much as possible our perception of reality.
And I feel that some of that is falling apart as we see the official story of events such as the Sandy Hook shooting, the Boston Marathon bombing, of course, the September 11th, 2001 attacks. The official story is drowned out online with alternative theories. That's an interesting microcosm there of the gatekeeper backdrop person that's on call.
Right. Yeah, and I just think probably people listening could relate to that. They probably have their own experiences where they've seen somebody around them doing maybe something very similar to that.
Indeed, yes. I don't have anything specific, but I know that it's happened to me in the past. I've had individuals who I've just met sort of recoil about some of the topics that I bring up on this show, and it's an overreaction to some of the things that are discussed on the show. So whether that's a programming issue or gatekeeper backdrop on call, I'm not certain about it, but I have some experience with that. Now, in the larger context here, you have some anecdotes about what's the purpose of this backdrop individual or individuals to begin with?
Well, I think, you know, it serves several purposes. Like, for instance, in the anecdote I just relayed, it was basically to instigate control over our, you know, the direction of the conversation and our thought processes. There's that. But then, you know, and like what Dolores was saying, what my brother was saying, is one of their purposes is to fill in the gaps and just create the illusions of a populated society or reality. So it's kind of a banal reason. It's just harmless. It's just filling in the gaps. But then you got, you know, helping to promote the version of the world and reality that the powers that be want us to believe. Matrix agents, gatekeepers, whatever you want to call them, both on a microcosm and macrocosm level. And then I also theorize, you know, sometimes they don't even necessarily have a purposeful agenda per se, because it's more of a situation where their consciousness has become severely weakened or fractured, you know, and it allows other opportunistic stuff to intermittently take control of their wheel for, you know, spur of the moment antics, but it's not planned necessarily. It just sort of happens. So they can serve, you know, different reasons just depending on the situation. I don't think it's any one thing.
The idea that the backdrop people are there to fill in the background, I wonder why that's even needed. Why can't we don't need filler? I mean, sometimes
maybe less people would be better. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, like Suzette in her hypnosis session with Dolores, who, you know, again, they were one of the first people to talk about backdrop people. They were saying, you know, you need other people around you to get in your way and provide situations for you. I guess trying to imply that maybe wouldn't have happened otherwise. And then therefore it can be a nice learning lesson for you. You could get, you know, more things happening to you in this reality, like almost like bouncing your energy off of them or the situations they create, which apparently can be oftentimes negative. But, you know, it's for you to have your learning lessons, but that might be kind of, and that's true. Maybe it is. It's kind of more of the positive spin on it. But I do think there could be more of the insidious side of things where it doesn't really serve us at all. And instead, it's more for energy feeding, create negative situations that get people upset. And yeah, we may learn something from it, and that's all good. But so it has its pros and cons. But it does feed something that feeds on energy of that sort.
Now, in regard to the purpose of the backdrop reality, backdrop individuals, and what Dolores Cannon was talking about in that video, she was mentioning that there's an evolutionary benefit to have the backdrop people around you. So there was a positive spin here on it. However, there's another maybe not so positive aspect here.
And certainly, like, even all negative situations, for the most part, you can always try to find the silver lining in some way in which you learned something or grew as a person. So it ultimately, you know, even negative stuff has, you know, positive things that can come out of it. It's not just completely negative. But yeah, like, I think there really is more to this theory, and that there could be a more insidious side of it in terms of these things are instigating negative emotions within people and creating feeding situations, you know, like negative feeding for other stuff that feeds on that. So it's not just so that we can learn lessons. I think it benefits stuff that connects through them as well. So we learn something, sure, but they get to feed.
And the listeners understand, because we've had a lot of discussion on this show about psychic vampires and what type of energy they need to feed. And it's been validated by doctors. In fact, we had Dr. Joe Slate on discussing that exact thing, and he was commissioned by the United States Army to study the human auric field for that purpose. So he also put a book together called Psychic Vampires to talk about that aspect of it. And it's a very real thing. And we had listeners call in and talk about that. And a listener that didn't get on the air had called in and left a message for the public affairs director at that time saying, I am with a group of psychic vampires and we're not as bad as you think we are, but we do need to feed off of you.
Okay, wow. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, regarding frequency, you mentioned it a couple times, and we've talked about this on a past show with you, and you had mentioned that you can change your frequency regarding your article being in the flow.
Right, and other random weirdness often mistakenly attributed to gang stalking. So it's a mouthful. That's the full title.
That's the full title. All right. But you mentioned that you can change your frequency. Is that important to understand around this topic also?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm putting together another article right now. It's in the works that I was hoping to have gotten out before we even had this interview, but it's gotten pushed back. But it absolutely talks about that. It kind of, and I talk about it all around my website, but I have this article that focuses specifically on the idea of abusers, people who are abusing people. And I really, truly believe from my own experience and what I have witnessed and experienced that when you change your reaction to these kind of people who act as like predatorial, like sharks that are drawn to the blood, like they can sense a weak person. When you change who you are, like your frequency and your reactions, you no longer find these people coming around you anymore. So I absolutely believe that. And I've seen it for myself back when, before I was, you know, changing my reactions and my frequency, I would get these kind of bully type abuser people like at work or whatever, started with my own family growing up. And then, you know, it's kind of now imprinted in my field. And now I'm at work and I got these people that act like that or just in whatever situations. And I hadn't learned the best way to respond to them or, you know, get upset inside and I'd feed into it. But when I learned about frequency and feeding and the you know, energy vampires, like you said, and just all of this stuff, it kind of just all came together. And I'm learning how now to not have those reactions. And so I don't see it anymore. It just doesn't happen to me anymore like it used to.
Oh, that's very interesting. Hello? Well, we haven't been plagued with too many problems during this interview, Carissa, but our line had unexpectedly cut off, and I heard a loud pop on my end. So right when you were talking about that, did you finish what you needed to say about?
I'm not sure, but if you would like me to reiterate, because I feel it's a really important point, and it's actually very interesting that the line cut out right when I was trying to make it. So it's very interesting, but you can change your personal frequency, and does it have an effect? Do I feel it has an effect on these like possible background types, the energy vampires? And I say absolutely yes. In my personal experience, from what I have witnessed, yes. When you change who you are and stop having the reactions where you get upset or flummoxed, where you cry, you get angry, whatever the reaction may be to these bullies and abusers and energy feeders, just the negative types that are instigating chaos in your life and throwing wrenches in the works. When you learn how to stop reacting in the old way, you just change your frequency, you notice that they stop coming into your reality because it's not working anymore. They can't get anything from you. To answer your question, yes, and it's just a very important point that I would want to reiterate to the listeners. And I'm in the process of actually writing an article right now about, you know, bully abusers and I liken them to like sharks being drawn to the blood, and it's like they can sense weak people and those who have a frequency of being easy prey, where you're going to respond to their antics and get upset and feed into it and not stand up for yourself. But when you learn how to stand up for yourself and to not feed into them, then they don't pick up on your scent, you could say, maybe. It seems to be maybe what it is, and then they don't come around anymore.
That's a pretty good analogy, the shark bait. I like that. Or, you know, the smelling of fear.
And weakness. And
the initial topic here is the backdrop reality and background people as a conceptual discussion. I want to ask you to go back over some of the types for listeners who might just be tuning in, so we can just briefly summarize some of the types that we're discussing here and how it ties into your work.
Sure. Well, like I had said before in the previous show, the first time I ever came across this concept was through my brother Joe in late 2001. He was somebody who claimed to have had abductions going on, but he was the first person to tell me about this idea. And the way he related is that there's just, you know, people walking around among us who have been purposely placed there by these other higher intelligences, and they are functioning in the capacity of filling in the gaps, creating the illusion of a populated society or reality. So they're background characters or drones. That was one of the phrases he used. And, you know, this implies that our world is faked in some way, maybe, or, you know, either in its entirety or just some parts of it. And he also mentioned the idea of holographic projection, faked reality, which ties into that. So that was the first time I ever came across it. And that relates to another person who was out there talking about something related to this, which is Barbara Marciniak and her book Bringers of the Dawn. And the entities that she channels, I guess, mentioned back in 1992 when this book first came out, the idea of holographic inserts being put into our reality. Faked dramas that are inserted in by these higher alien intelligences for the purposes of manipulating, controlling our consciousness, energy feeding, and, you know, also to for disinformation, kind of lead us in the wrong direction of where our thought processes are. So she was another source that was talking about that. But I know my brother, for instance, had never read her stuff, and neither had I. I'd only came across it after hearing him talk about it to me in 2001. And then we've been talking about Dolores Cannon, and she talks about the backdrop people in her book, The Convoluted Universe, Volume 4. It was something that kind of came out when she was doing a hypnotic regression with one of her clients named Suzette, who had described when they were looking at back at one of her past lives, she mentioned in passing that some of the people that were around her were what she calls backdrop people, where they don't have an evolutionary path. They're almost like painted onto a backdrop, almost like movie extras to kind of fill in your reality, to serve multiple purposes that, you know, maybe kind of like get in your way and create dramas that you can learn from, almost implying that without them, what is going to populate our reality to give you those experiences? So it almost seemed to be what it was insinuating, but that these backdrop people, they just live, work, breathe, and die, and they don't serve any higher purpose other than that. They don't have a destiny or a higher spirit. I have my own theory. I think another possibility for what could be happening in this reality is a person's mind or spirit may be already weak to begin with, or it gets severely weakened and fractured due to difficult, you know, traumatic life events, and it leaves them highly vulnerable to getting manipulated and piloted by this other stuff, whatever it is, these forces. And I've definitely seen evidence for this firsthand in my own life. And these are people that I call the half-empty pawns. You know, I say that physically they're real, but mentally, spiritually, they're not all there. Mm-hmm. So they can go about their daily life, but they're just weakened and vulnerable to these other forces.
Our guest is Carissa Conti, author of the book Chasing Phantoms. Our topic is backdrop people. We'll be right back after this break. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Carissa Conti, author of the book Chasing Phantoms. about a concept called backdrop people.
And then there was this theory that my boyfriend Tom put out, which I thought was very fascinating. He writes the website montauk.net. It's a website centering around metaphysics, spirituality, alternative science. And his idea that he had told me about when we were discussing this is that some of whom we might think of as a background person due to how they're acting may not be that at all, but rather maybe they're people whose soul energy isn't fully in this particular timeline. So, you know, in that case, it'd be people who are filling in the gaps of this timeline, acting as a placeholder, but their soul energy is invested in another timeline. And, you know, maybe that would be the timeline where they're doing more and having that life spark and personality and consciousness that seems to be lacking over here.
I got to talk about that for a minute, because it seems like then this partially souled person or individual is here as an artifact, or it by default, there's not a real reason for that person to be here, only it's accidental or something. It doesn't seem right. that person should even be here then.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of like what we were touching on before. Like, what happens then when you're trying to interact with somebody who maybe isn't supposed to be here, and you're sort of imposing yourself on them in some way, and what can happen in that instance? You know, glitchy reactions can happen, maybe. I mean, I think I've seen kind of something like that, and I gave an example before of what happened when Tom was feeling out of sorts and in an improbable situation interacting with people that maybe he wasn't supposed to be interacting with, and just very strange things happened. But I know, like, a good related anecdote to that idea of what you're saying is something that it's a phenomenon that I've noticed where, you know, the people might be real, but, you know, for some reason they're not allowed to know about or acknowledge anything out of the ordinary. And so they behave very strange and glitchy when you try to go there in a conversation. And you kind of actually touched on this earlier, very briefly. You said you've had people who reacted, you know, just almost like skipping over what you were saying. If you mentioned this show to them and what you talk about, and then they just get like a little taken aback and the reaction is kind of strange. So you're kind of wondering what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of had something very similar to that. People get kind of strange and glitchy when I try to go there in a conversation. So, it, you know, if they are real, then in essence, it's like two different realms maybe that are coexisting side by side and who are only allowed to interact if the conversation remains mundane and kind of physicality based, nothing, you know, beyond that.
Right.
And I mean, I could get into some anecdotes I have there.
I'd be interested in hearing a few of those, Carissa.
Oh, okay. Well, this is one I've told you about before, in private, like when we weren't on the air, but it is the one about the hotel where I was working at a hotel back in 2005 in Virginia, and I'm up at the front desk, and the front desk manager, Mahmood, was standing next to me, and he's at his computer, I'm at mine, and, you know, the concierge guy, Hunter, he's standing in front of us, kind of on the other side of the counter facing us, and we're all just kind of hanging out because nothing was happening at that moment. And so somehow in the conversation, I kind of managed to work in a sort of joking way, like a reference to the hotel being Illuminati. And there's a reason why I said it, because it was just kind of very weird, the things that were going on in that hotel. And I talk about this actually in my book, Chasing Phantoms. But but this is at that moment when I said the Illuminati Hotel, that's where I kind of watched as the other two shut down. They went on pause mode, basically. There's no other way to describe it. And they did what I call pulling an existence. And, you know, in the movie Existence, you have the two main characters who are interfaced with a virtual reality video game. And when they interact with game characters, they need to say the right prompts. And if they don't, the characters will go into a looping pause mode. And they only come back and resume when the right things are said to them. So that was exactly like that. I mean, both guys just suddenly stopped moving. And they looked down in front of them at nothing, just not moving for multiple seconds until I changed the subject and moved on to something normal. And then they both came back too at that same exact moment. So Mahmood went back to typing on his computer. Hunter went, you know, back to talking about just mundane stuff. And I was just like really intrigued by this because I'd never witnessed something like that before. So a few minutes later, I tried it again just to see what would happen and made another reference to the Illuminati Hotel. Joking around, and they both did it again. They just stopped moving, just sort of stared down at nothing, being on pause mode until I changed the subject back to normal stuff. And then they came to and just resumed.
Wow, you tested it.
Yeah, I did it more than once. I'm like, let's just see what happens when I do it again. Like, just keep pushing it, you know, just see. And it was this, I've just never before or since then have I actually experienced something like that. And, you know, the funny part was Mahmoud, who was from Egypt, he was kind of aware of, you know, he was the one who told me, for instance, that the video that we all were shown in the media about the supposed capture of Saddam Hussein could not have happened when they said it did, because the date palms that were featured in the background of that video were out of season for what the time period was supposed to have been. And being Egyptian, he would know and recognize something like that. So he was somebody that actually demonstrated an awareness of a conspiracy and was questioning. And, you know, but when it came to that, for whatever reason, it was just shut down. And I don't know why. But I've had this kind of like weird glitchy reactions with people sometimes in conversation, and maybe you have too, where you go there and mention something a little off the wall, and it's not even that they laugh at you or like make fun of you or kind of give each other funny looks, because at least that would be acknowledging it. It's like they just skip it. You just didn't say that. Or they react in a glitchy way, and then you're, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of left feeling like I just did something I wasn't supposed to do. Like, I wasn't supposed to say that. You know, I just, like, I'm attempting to mess with the program or reality in some way. And, you know, I'm interfering. And I just get that uh-oh kind of feeling. And then we all just go back to talking about the accepted script of mundane stuff. And everything is okay again.
Yes, it's happened to me, especially when I first started finding out about the aerosol operations and discussing it with as many people as I could who I thought it would be important to talk about with. And I did run into that a little bit, but a lot of anger and I don't want to hear it responses.
And it's very interesting because it kind of relates to that whole, like, the gatekeeper pawn thing I mentioned earlier, that angry, over-the-top response that was just very strange. Like, why are they having such a intense emotional reaction?
Right, and some good...
Why is it such a trigger? So.
Yes, exactly. It is. That's a good word for it. You know, you were mentioning how some of the purpose or the usefulness of the backdrop people and to have those people around for various learning purposes or evolution. But I was just thinking, well, you can get out of that easily and just go somewhere that's deserted and experience life that way. And the backdrop person, they may not come around or wouldn't exist. That would be an interesting test.
Like, if you try to remove yourself from the equation as much as possible, like sort of isolating yourself?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't attempted to do such a thing, but I mean, it's an interesting theory. Like, what would happen if you did that?
Somebody starts building a small cabin right next to yours.
And actually, I don't advocate the idea of doing something like that, trying to isolate yourself, because I mean, for some people, it is the right thing to do. Maybe they just they work better when they don't have people around. But I think that's also a dangerous thing to do. I actually touch on that in a different way for a different reason in my book, Chasing Phantoms, which is, as I mentioned, it is free to download on my website. So I'm not trying to plug it for sales. It's free. But I touch on the idea of the dangers of people who maybe have weird things happening to them in life and they're being targeted. You know, just be careful you don't isolate yourself, because I've noticed that seems to be something that stuff tries to do. It tries to get you, maybe you become easier to access the less people you have around to interfere. So, you know, isolating, it might work for some people. I'd actually advise against it. Instead of having it be a black-white situation where you either have to isolate yourself completely, go on a desert island or out in the remote wilderness, or be in the middle of some crazy urban area surrounded by crazy people that are just sucking you dry, you know, energy-wise and creating problems, I say the third choice is become aware, learn what to do to modify your own reactions and responses, and so you can live around people, but they're not bothering you as much anymore because you have changed who you are and you're dealing with it in a better way.
Yes. Now, those are good and proper guidelines. However, I'm interested in the idea of testing the backdrop reality. And would you recommend people do that?
If they want. I don't know what different ways you could do. Like I said, and actually I decided I may actually start doing more of this, but it's where you kind of throw weird little things out in conversation just to see what people say. Because I had a recent thing where that happened at work, and I said something kind of offbeat, making a joke about missing time and alien abductions, and everyone, they didn't even, it's not even, like I said, like they looked at each other and gave each other funny looks. They just skipped over it. Like that just never was said. And so that made me start to think, well, what would happen if I just start saying weird things like that all the time? And I just don't let it go. And I want to just keep testing people and pushing them in little ways like that. And I don't know. I mean, I thought I might start doing something like that. So if people want to test it in other ways, why not, you know?
Yes. I was thinking, what other ways would you suggest? How would you test it?
Well, like I said, like right now, I mean, you joked earlier about trying to put your hand through a holographic person, but I don't even know if you would even, if it's real, I don't even know if you'd even be able to get to a point where you would be allowed to do that, if that could even be possible.
Yes, I know. I was thinking of that. And the isolation issue could be really interesting, because also it gets into an area where we've had some guests on talking about organizing, gifting towers in remote areas, and then all of a sudden somebody would appear out in the middle of nowhere. This shiny black car would show up, and somebody would get out of the car and just stand there and watch. So have you heard of cases like that?
Yeah, I've heard of it actually through you. We were talking off air one time, and you were relaying those anecdotes, and I don't disbelieve it. I absolutely think something like that could be possible. I mean, I've had some weird things in my own life, so I believe that can happen. I think that's almost like witnessing that glitchy side of reality where, you know, you're getting clued in to this other, like seeing behind the curtain. You're getting to witness like that. It shouldn't be possible. This person shouldn't be able to appear out of nowhere in a shiny black car in this really remote area. So you're getting to see that, you know, some weirdness can happen when you start attempting to pursue these subjects. In that case, it was the organite, the gifting, and other people might be pursuing research into abductions or the conspiracies, the chemtrails, like you were saying earlier.
Right. So testing the reality a little bit. I thought, I don't recommend people do this necessarily, but it can be done. It definitely can be done. And if you have done this, listeners, send me an email and let me know some of the experiences you've had, and I'll definitely relay them. I'll send them on to Carissa. John Keel, the author of Mothman Prophecies and other books such as Operation Trojan Horse, which is a great book, had pointed out that he suspected that not everyone was human who appeared to look human, and he suspected that they could be some type of android, which is another element of what we're discussing here.
Mm-hmm.
So here's an example from, you know, a well-known author, just showing that it's definitely out there in the ideas of authors and films and popular culture. This isn't something that is in left field. A lot of scripts have been written to discuss this possibility in the nature of, you know, what we call reality, which I think is very powerful to start to break down. However, it's been fictionalized. Very rarely do we hear a discussion like this that puts it into another context of, wait a minute, this is very likely possible, and here are some references to think about.
But yeah, when you mentioned John Keel and his theory that some people walking among us may be androids, you know, he's drawing that conclusion due to all his research and, you know, just things he's been hearing and other people talk about and what he's witnessed. And he may have been onto something. And my own experience, I mean, I don't have any definitive proof that this is real, that this is something that could be happening. But I have suspected that, especially when it comes to the high level people, for instance, especially in the media, placed on TV, who are going to be watched by millions, that the talking heads, where they're promoting the usual divisive, false two-choice dichotomy thinking, the status quo on all subjects, promoting this increasingly kind of dumbed-down infotainment culture with celebs and, you know, mindless frivolity. And it's just, who are these people? And like, I don't know if anyone out there listening has noticed this or if you've noticed this, Jeff, but those times where I have seen TV, because I don't own a TV, but when I have been exposed to it, it's like I almost cannot believe what I'm seeing on TV. Like, are these people real? Because I've wondered if we're looking at a situation where maybe not everybody is what we think they are. And that's one of the more extreme fringe level things that I get into in my article when everyone's on a different page, discussing the different possibilities for what could be happening in this reality with why people are, you know, not always on the level and why we can't ever seem to become united, and why everything is so divisive. But I have wondered if because they just don't act right. You know, I just can't believe what I'm seeing. They got like big crazy eyes and these fake grins on their face, and they're just not acting right. And the things they say, the stuff that's coming out of their mouth, it's like either they're just highly programmed or they're not even real to begin with. And I really entertain those ideas, as crazy as it may sound, but I'm just going on what my eyes are looking at and what I'm hearing. And I don't remember things being like that when I was a kid. Things have really changed with the media, and I almost wonder if we've gotten to that point now where they've got people that are now on the media that aren't even real.
Yes, Carissa, I often ask that question, who are these people? And I've noticed, yeah, things are a lot different than they used to be when I was younger, especially the people, the talking heads on television.
Right. I mean, common sense, you know, and just logic dictates that you have to have these types under control. I mean, saying exactly what it is that the powers that be want them to say with no surprises. I mean, they have to be under control in some way, so they're not going to get on the air and just go off the script and say things that might give anything away. And so, you know, just that's just kind of common sense. And you can accomplish that either through, I guess you could just be lucky to find very obedient people that are going to do exactly what they're told, or you can program them in some way so they're highly mind controlled, or maybe they're not even real at all. And I just know that when I've seen these people in those times that I've watched TV, I just can't even believe what I'm seeing. This can't even be real. So I know I've had those ideas.
You're
I feel
right.
Like it's almost like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, like we've been taken over by something.
If this is indeed the case, it's important to not have these people go off script, and some eventually do. And even those situations are often staged. But yes, they definitely, it seems that there are precautions taken so the puppets don't come loose from their strings. And,
right.
And especially now where the agenda that we're seeing unfold around us, it gets more and more intense, especially with the push to microchip people and all of this, and the level of microwave RF radiation in our environment, and the health effects of the type of food that is being sold around us, and on and on and on. You can just go down the list. If you're a rationally thinking person, you might have a very difficult time broadcasting highly deceptive material out into the media. So they might hedge that situation.
Right. I mean, either they're like really lucky and they just happen to find these people that are just willing to do and say anything and stay in line and follow the script. Or like I said, maybe they're being programmed like some kind of mind control. I don't know. Or they're just not even real. And, you know, how that works, I don't know, but I have thought of it.
And they show us
possibility.
Yeah, they show us these prototype robots in Japan. So, you know, the idea.
Right. And then there's the idea that whatever we're being shown in the mainstream world is like however many decades behind what's actually going on secretly behind the scenes. And they actually are way more advanced and everything. So we're always decades behind what's actually possible. So for all we know, they have that kind of technology. And we're only seeing the beginning stages of it in the mainstream world. Like what you said with, you know, Japan seems to be one of those ones that's always showing off the robots that they're creating. But I actually think they probably have very sophisticated technology that they've already achieved behind the scenes.
Right on.
Like
yeah.
Black ops stuff, you know.
Indeed. Yes. Carissa, what does this mean in terms of the nature of reality and what is going on around us in our environment in this experience?
Well, it has huge implications, and I think you'd have to be somebody who's had these kinds of experiences that give you that glimpse behind the curtain so you can know it for yourself and not just, you know, taking other people's word for it. But if you've had these things happen, it really does make you have to question what is going on here. What is this place that these things can happen? Because we're told that reality functions in a particular way, especially science, you know, it tells us how things are, but then people are having experiences which contradict that and are showing us that it's not, it doesn't work the way we've been taught, and things are not what we've been told that they are. Mm-hmm. So when you have these experiences, yeah, it just makes you have to question then, just extrapolate out from there. What is this reality? Like, what is this place? And we've seen in movies where they have fun theories like The Matrix, where it has its idea of like, we're all plugged in and into these pods and we're feeding machines, and you have other movies like Dark City or The 13th Floor or Existenz and things like that. We're talking about fake reality in some way, or The Truman Show, or people are in on it. It's like a fake staged show. So when you have glitches in the Matrix, things like that that are happening, and reality is doing things it's not supposed to do, yeah, it can make you wonder. And so I try to come up with ideas of what's going on here.
The nature of reality in terms of what we're being told versus our own experience when we actually see it, that sort of mimics the pop culture entertainment. So the one aspect is the Carl Jung's projection is perception, meaning we project out our consciousness into the environment. And it's merely an artifact of our own subjective observation versus what objective reality is. So there's that aspect of it. And then the Red Queen effect, where you have the definition as an evolutionary hypothesis, which proposes that organisms must constantly adapt, evolve, and proliferate, not merely to gain reproductive advantage, but also simply to survive. So that reality around us is constructed for that to be maintained, survival and reproductive advantage. And what we're seeing as backdrop reality is the constructs for that to exist. And then from within that, here we are navigating as souled human beings around a backdrop reality. And
are you there?
Yes. Yep.
Oh, my God. It's parked right outside our apartment. It's coming by. Okay, it's going away. It's driving out. It's leaving. Can you believe that? We never, ever, ever have an ice cream truck. Where is this thing coming from? Oh, my God. Okay, it's gone. Well, I think, you know, we have a case of where certainly I think our subconscious, our mind, we're capable of doing things that we might not even be aware that we can do. So we might be influencing reality and we don't even know that we are. And we might be creating a lot of situations. And it's something John Keel actually touched on in Operation Trojan Horse, which, and Mothman Prophecies as well, where he had noticed in all of his studying of these, the weird stuff, that the more people invested their energy and emotions into it, especially when they're fearful and paranoid, it just, the phenomenon would grow and it just get worse and worse and worse. So it seems to be reflecting back their own thoughts and, you know, what was going on in their subconscious. So he noticed that. And I also noticed it too, that this phenomenon relies on the energy that you're putting into it. So especially if you're fearful and paranoid and whatnot, like the lower frequency stuff. But so I think there's a large part of it is we're generating it somehow. We don't even understand how that works. But I do think that there are independent beings, whatever they are, that higher independent beings that are, you know, not us necessarily, that are also interfacing with this reality and doing things and manipulating stuff. And I think we can have both going on.
So we have both things going on. Can you describe what you mean by that?
Well, I just think that we are both, we are creating aspects of our reality, kind of like what you mentioned earlier in this talk, like you believe that, you know, we do have reality creation abilities and we do to some extent influence our own reality. And it's not always external. It's coming from us. And I really do believe that. And I've seen evidence for that. But I do think that we also have outside forces that are at work in this reality. And that this reality may almost be like a construct of some sort that we all incarnate into for whatever reason, maybe to experience existence and to learn, to grow. I don't know. Maybe we've been trapped in it. Like you hear a lot of the theories that we're, this reality is trapped souls. I don't know if that's valid or whatnot, but you know, we're here, we're experiencing, we might be interfacing with it, creating our own reality, but we also have external influences that are doing things.
Right. Positive and negative?
Yes. I've positive and negative.
That's a very probable conclusion, Carissa, based on what we've talked about, what you've experienced, and what a lot of others have written about in detail, including you. Listeners, if this topic and the other topics we've touched on is of interest to you, you can read much more about this on Carissa Conti's website, intoworlds.net, where her book you can also download for free. There's a free version there in PDF format. And the title of that book is Chasing Phantoms, Personal Experiences, Observations, and Theories into the Abduction Mind Control Phenomena. Carissa, thank you so much for being on the show. Really appreciate you expanding on this concept, I think for the first time, really, of backdrop reality and background people.
Well, thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed being on your show.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.